हरिः
ॐ सहनवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 60, bottom. Narad Muni continued, even if a man is poor, he should not endeavor to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul together or to become a famous religionist. Just means, in other words, he's not making the endeavor just for maintenance. He's making the endeavor because it's his involvement in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Because Krishna's already taking care. So therefore, for us, then it's how we can be involved in Krishna's service. Just as a great python, although lying in one place, not endeavoring for its livelihood, gets the food it needs to maintain body and soul, one who is desireless also obtains his livelihood without endeavor. One who is content and satisfied, and who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead residing in everyone's heart, enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed, and who therefore wanders in all directions with a desire to accumulate wealth? Right? So, for the devotee, because he's dependent on the Lord, the happiness he has, that the materialist can't have. Right? Because they always have so many desires, trying to go for all these different things, and because of that, they're suffering so much. For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there's no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there's no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. Footnote 22. Note, these three verses, 15 to 17, are repeated from chapter 10, verses 48 to 50. My dear King, a self-satisfied person can be happy even with only drinking water. However, one who is driven by the senses, especially by the tongue and genitals, must accept the position of a household dog to satisfy his senses. 15 to 18. Srila Prabhupada comments. According to the Shastras, a Brahmana or a cultured person in Krishna consciousness will not enter anyone's service to maintain body and soul together, and especially not for satisfaction of the senses. A true Brahmana is always satisfied. Even if he has nothing to eat, he can drink a little water and be satisfied. This is only a matter of practice. Unfortunately, however, no one is educated in how to be satisfied in self-realization. As explained above, a devotee is always satisfied because he feels the presence of the super soul within his heart and thinks of him 24 hours a day. That is real satisfaction. A devotee is never driven by the dictations of the tongue and genitals, and thus he is never victimized by the laws of material nature. Narad Muni continued, because of greed for the sake of the senses, the spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a devotee, a brahmana, who is not self-realized, self-satisfied, dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanishes. The strong bodily desires and needs of a person disturbed by hunger and thirst are certainly satisfied when he eats. Similarly, if one becomes very angry, that anger is satisfied by chastisement and its reaction. But as for greed, even if a greedy person has conquered all the directions of the world, or has enjoyed everything in the world, still he will not be satisfied. Right? So, of these other things, you do something and there'll be a temporary satisfaction. But for greed, there is no satisfaction because whatever you get, you want more. So it just increases. You know, so he's conquered the whole world. He's enjoyed everything there is. Then he won't be satisfied. I think there was a king in... wasn't so much greed, but just this lack of being able to satisfy. There was a king, I think, in Rajasthan. He had so much facility, he enjoyed everything, and he was doing everything that you could possibly do to be happy. And he died of boredom. It's a clinical name for it, that you just have nothing to do, no will to live, so you just die. Like that, so... That's the point. Is even you get everything, you're still not going to be happy. So this was, he had enough intelligence. See, you couldn't be happy, but not enough intelligence to surrender to the Lord. So it could have been a great stepping stone for self-realization. Right? But the greedy person doesn't have that intelligence. He just keeps desiring more and more. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, dissatisfaction arises from greed. Because greed is difficult to conquer, dissatisfaction is hard to remove. Narad Muni continued, O King Yudhishthir, many persons with varied experience, many legal advisors, many learned scholars, and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their positions. So if what you have, you're satisfied, then you can work with that. But if you always want more and more, no matter what happens, then one will always have a problem. Because at some point, what you want and what you can get and what you need, all this doesn't match anymore. So then it will be a difficulty. Srila Prabhupada comments, for spiritual advancement, one should be materially satisfied. For if one is not materially satisfied, his greed for material development will result in the frustration of his spiritual advancement. There are two things that nullify all good qualities. One is poverty. Daridra dosho guna rashi nashi. If one is poverty stricken, all his good qualities become null and void. Because he just thinks about how to take care of himself. So all good things that he has go. All his qualities go. Similarly, if one becomes too greedy, his good qualifications are lost. Therefore, the adjustment is that one should not be poverty-stricken, but one must try to be fully satisfied with the bare necessities of life and not be greedy. For a devotee to be satisfied with the bare necessities is therefore the best advice for spiritual advancement. Yes. So you situate yourself in between the two. Narad Muni continued, by making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires for sense gratification. Similarly, by giving up envy, one should conquer anger. By discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. And by discussing the truth, one should give up fear. Because truth means it's about Krishna, so that's truth. That will free you from fear. Facts can't free you from fear, so that's not the meaning of truth. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense.
Completely.
See, in the modern context, they take truth means facts. You know, about situations, time and space. But the Vedic truth means knowledge about Krishna. So it's facts, but it's knowledge about Krishna. That will make you fearless. Because otherwise, you know more facts or less facts. It doesn't make you fearless. Right? You may, for a moment, then think, okay, that's there, then that's nice, but the next moment something else is not there. Or so only when we know Krishna, surrender to Krishna, that will make us fearless. Right? So this is how all these different qualities that are a problem, how they can be adjusted. Right? Because there's always that, how they one moves into the next, like Krishna and Gita. You contemplate senses, then you become attached, then one gets involved, then one gets frustrated, then one gets angry, and then one falls down. Like that. Does that make sense? So they go in this line. So they make plans with determination once you give up lusty desires for sense gratification. So that means the plans aren't plans with determinations for sense gratification. You know, there are plans and determination according to your duty, Krishna consciousness, like this. Because then that's there, you don't get distracted by sense gratification.
Yes. Maybe side question. The basic sense gratification is part of the duty?
Basic sense gratification. No, engagement of the senses.
Okay, so we should...
It's two different things. See, when you're engaging the senses not connected with Krishna, that's sense gratification.
So
when you're engaging your senses connected to Krishna, that's not called sense gratification.
So sense gratification would always be beyond the scope of Krishna consciousness?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's not that what you're... It's just like... you're eating something. Now it's offered to Krishna, then it's devotional service that you're eating. That's not offered to Krishna, that's sense gratification.
And if you overeat it in prasadam,
if you
overeat prasadam. So it's offered.
Yes, but then it's mixed because you're eating Krishna, so you're getting purified, but at the same time as do the greed, then you're going to have miseries because if you overeat, then there's always going to be some reaction.
Okay.
So the point is then with time you just understand it's about that service to Krishna. It's not about the eating process. See, that's the things we're attached to, the eating process. But it's not about that. Eating must be done, but it's about doing it in connection to Krishna. So therefore you enjoy prasad up to the point where you don't need anymore. Right? It says keeping body and soul together. That's not that the body is so big it crushes the soul and that keeps them together. Like that. You know, like that. You know, so, huh?
Trying to avoid that one.
Yeah, so it just means that how much is required for you, like Bhim saying. When they were living as Brahmins and begging, then they were just keeping body and soul together. So that meant half of whatever they begged went to him. And even then, he was hungry. Yeah, you know, as evidenced with that encounter with Baka, you know, they you know, means he's a rakshasa, so he can eat a whole person. So they send out lots of prasad. I'm sure it was not just for just one meal. It was probably to keep him busy for some time. But Bhima was so, you know, hungry that he ate all of it at once. Even he's being attacked by, you know, generally it's like he'd be eating and then there's an opportunity to fight with a rakshasa, he would take that. But here, he'd rather eat and you know, just ignore the rakshasa, even though he's beating on his back and this and that. And you know, so it's a, yes. So that's the point, is that's keeping. So for him, it was half of what was there, and the other half was then between the other five of them. And so that was considered equal. So how much, you know, means it was enough for him to survive, it was enough for them to survive. It wasn't that anybody was wanting, but it was all at the same. So that's the point, is it's always going to be different. Actually, no, it was six of them, because Kunti was there. Yeah. No. It was five of them, because Draupadi wasn't there. Yeah. But I'm sure any time they did that, that's the way it worked. You know, till Draupadi got the plate, then you didn't have to worry. Yeah, or in Virat, then he was in charge of the kitchen. And then during Rajasuya, he was in charge of the kitchen. So, you know, Krishna takes care. That's the point. Okay, so giving up envy, one should conquer anger. Right? Because anger comes when there's frustration in what you want to do. So if there's no envy, then you don't become frustrated. You just look, okay, how to go around this, how to deal, how to function. If there's envy, then there's going to be anger at that point. By discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. Because right? Greed means you just want more and more. So if you understand the disadvantages of having wealth, then we can give up greed. Does that make sense? Because we want more, so discussing the disadvantages of having more, then you can slowly give up the desire for more. So in other words, the area that you're working with, that then is dealt with in its own area, or its connections. Is that? Yeah. And by discussing the truth, one can give up fear. By discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. Because lamentation is about just how the modes of nature are functioning, and illusion, how we see things. So by discussing the spiritual knowledge, you can give up, you know, how you say, the material viewpoint. By By discussing, okay, by serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. By keeping silence, one can avoid obstacles on the path of mystic yoga. Right? So in other words, if you don't talk about nonsense, then you avoid obstacles. Changing of the guard.
Okay. I mean, that's a step.
Okay. See. Okay. Didn't want to know official 90 degree turns. And, okay. Keeping it simple. Okay. Okay. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy, right? So if you stop sense, so going back to the point, if you give up lusty desires for sense gratification, that you can, it means by determination you give up lusty desires, right? By giving up sense gratification, one can conquer envy. By conquering envy, you conquer anger. Right, but discussing the disadvantages of the material world, you can give up greed. By discussing the spiritual, you can give up fear or the identification with it. Right. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. Right, so all these are going to basically be yourself. Now that's so the adibhotic, then by good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. That doesn't mean that they stop doing stuff that may not be appreciated, and it just doesn't bother you. Does that make sense? That's the whole point, is that it's not about changing them, it's about changing how you perceive it, because the field of activity is the field that you perceive. Right, because you only perceive a certain amount of the Mahatattva, because we have certain senses, certain intelligence, certain mind. Therefore, we can only see certain things. Two people are standing in one place; they see two different things. Does that make sense? Yes.
But when Rupa Goswami was riding the boat, then there was mosquitoes. And they were bothering him, and he wanted to go from
there. Because that's something you can do if you're in a different place. But you have to remember, that was a recommendation this morning. Go to another place.
Okay.
But the point is you're not changing them. See, in other words, he's not trying to change the nature of the mosquito. What he's doing is adjusting his situation so they don't bother him. But how do you do that? By how you say it? Well, good behavior and freedom from envy.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to do, in other words, mosquitoes have to do their mosquito occupation. So, but it doesn't mean that you have to put your, you don't have to be charitable.
Yeah.
You can go to a position where they're not there.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. By meditation and trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. Okay, so that was adiatmic, was the big thing. We see the big problem is adiatmic. The adibhotic, then you just by giving good behavior and giving up envy. And adidaivic, then you give that up by meditation and trance. So by absorbing yourself in the Lord, then you give up the adidaivic. Because he's in control of everything, so there must be some plan, so then it doesn't bother you. So, taking everything, so Krishna consciousness will do all this. If you're Krishna conscious, you automatically control the senses, give up all these things, studying the spiritual subject matter, seeing the difference between matter and spirit. That's the meaning of the Ishupanishad, that you're studying knowledge and illusion side by side. So you see what's the strength of one and what's the weakness of the other, the position of the soul. So all this comes by that. You're cultivating good qualities like that, yes.
Could you please define the Adidaiva here?
Adidaiva.
Yeah.
That providence. The part of the providence.
Like the situation.
By, here. By good... Oh, it means what it means.
Yeah.
Oh, Adidaivic means the problems that come from the nature.
Like natural catastrophes or like the...
Yeah, natural catastrophes. It's hot out. It's cold out. There's, you know, like that. It's something that material nature does. You can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Can we say that maybe like astrological periods as well?
Yes, that, whatever it is.
And meditation for us would be japa, basically.
Meditation is absorption in Krishna. So then, yes, chanting, doing your service, absorbing yourself in the service, like that. Because if you're absorbed in service to Krishna, then anything that comes up as obstacles are just something to deal with in the performance of the service. You know, it's like you go into the kitchen, you pick something up, you drop it. It's not like, that's it, okay, that's it, I can't cook anymore, and walk out. You bend over, pick it up, and continue. You know, it wasn't meant that it should be like that, but it happens, so you adjust with it. Yes?
Here it says, suffering due to other living entities, that would be what?
That's the Adi Bhauta.
Okay. And providence is
the Adi.
Yeah. And mind and body, is that the atmic?
Means all the ones from by making plans with determination up to, and simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy. All that's dealing with adiatmic. That's what we're saying. That's the main point. So we're thinking, no, it's about, but we see these others, it's in one sentence.
Yeah.
The adibhautik and adiatmic are all in one sentence.
Here it also says that by practicing hatha yoga, pranayama, and so forth, one should contract suffering due to the body and mind.
Yes, but then that's also is that by in other words, absorbing yourself in the yoga process or devotional service, then what comes from the body and mind, then you deal with there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that, again, it goes back to the same thing. So these are technically how it works. Devotional service will take care of it. Because everything's connected back to Krishna, so therefore then everything has its solution in Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why if you see it connected to Krishna, then you just see the service, and so then the senses are properly engaged in the service, so that gets rid of all the disturbances that come from the body and mind. Right? Other living entities, then, you know, how devotionally would you deal with that situation, and you know, what should you do to be Krishna conscious? And then the next is when material energy does things, what should you do to be Krishna conscious?
So it starts always with the adiatmic.
Yeah, because you're the one that's being bothered.
But that's something that we can eat.
See, it's just like when you say adi bhautika, we're not referring to the disturbance that comes to others from other living entities.
Yeah, of course.
Because it doesn't bother us. Unless we identify with it, you know, it's family, then that's adiatmic, because we identify as there. Mm. But at the same time, as if the family members bother us, then that's adibhautik. No. So it means, yes, everything comes down to this, because everything functions on these three. As we were reading before, I think it was in, where was it? I think it was the third canto. The creation there was talking about them. So the adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautik.
It was different there.
That means it's a principle, and but it gets applied in different places, and so then it takes on. So the adidaivic, you know, could say is Krishna, the adibhautik are the demigods, and the adiatmic are yourself, or the one who's controlling everything, then that's the adiatmic is the Lord. And so depending upon where you're situating it, it moves around. But you always have this dynamic thing, basically, between yourself, others, and, you know, whatever is the, you know, supreme. So then if you understand Krishna is the supreme, then you take it up to there, and then anything within that doesn't bother you. Does that make sense? You see all other living entities, super souls in the heart, all parts and parts, then that doesn't bother you. And if you see yourself as servant of the Lord, then you don't bother yourself. Yeah? Okay. Yes?
If we're trying to get situated in our practice of devotional service nicely, and for... so we can execute devotional service nicely, then and there's obstacles in that, then how do we see that?
As just something to deal with. Because see, is that devotional service is rendered in the present. Mode of goodness is the present. So in other words, if I'm going to render service in this situation, then what should I do? Right? This has come there, so, you know, you're moving here, you're going to take darshan of the deities, and then this, you know, 7 foot, 500 pound guy stands in front of you, so then you either go to the right or left, whichever you see is the best, you know, gap. You know, you don't stop there and, hey, I was going here, why this guy's here, you know, he should move, I was, you know, no, you don't do that, you just move around. Because then, is it about darshan or is it about our being, you know, if things going the way we plan it? So the whole point is it's about doing something for Krishna. It's not technically about being successful at what you're doing for Krishna. Because if it's about success, then who's getting that success?
Well, Krishna's getting the results, so he should be good one.
Yes, but the point is why are we upset that the result doesn't come?
Because Krishna's not getting the result.
Then that's fine.
Okay.
But if that's not the way it is, then why is it like that? That's about us, not about Krishna. Because Krishna, it doesn't matter. It's all his anyway. It's like offering a lamp to the sun. Sun really doesn't need a lamp. You know, or the Ganges. You take Ganges water and offer it back in the Ganges. You know, it's that devotion that's there. So in other words, it's about the devotion in doing the activity. And so for the situation, what is going to be the best? Okay, this situation has changed, so it's not going to give the best. So what to do so that you can get the best in that, however it's adjusting. You understand? But if you get attached and know it should be this, the point is it's not available anymore. It's a matter of being dynamic, being able to adjust with that. It means we do in the present what's going to be the best for Krishna, and if we can get it, nice, and if not, we adjust so we can get the best in that situation. So whatever situation we're in, what's the best we can get? So in other words, we're having to discern between what is the devotional service and which aspect we may be in our own consciousness is not pure. That's the point we're discussing. That one's engaging things in Krishna's service, that's perfect. But within perfect, there's more perfect and most perfect. So that's what we're discussing. We're not discussing whether it's perfect or not.
Yeah.
That makes sense? Okay. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. Right? So sleep can be controlled by how you eat. They're directly connected. Right? You know, don't eat, don't sleep. Right? But the point is the sense something has to be eaten, then you eat in the mode of goodness, then the sleeping will be controlled. Right? So it means you eat things in the mode of passion, ignorance, then sleep will be more. You eat things in the mode of goodness, sleep will be less. You eat the proper amount in the mode of goodness, then also sleep will be just how much you need. You eat more than you require, it'll be more than you the sleep will be more. You eat less than you require, the sleep will be less than you require. So like that. So that, it's interesting. That's the point. Here's someone who is, you know, master in all these things. So then he's very simply giving how to conquer all these aspects. One must conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness. So that means through knowledge and detachment, right? And we get that through devotional service. And then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the platform of Shuddhasattva, to pure goodness. In other words, we might do something because this is the best thing to do, but the point is it's only the best thing to do because of its devotion to Krishna. So it's not that we're attached to the mode of goodness. It was popular, I think it was in the 90s maybe, there was this whole thing for a couple of years about how you have to come to the mode of goodness, otherwise you can't do devotional service. This Prabhupada makes the statement, but it's not that first get to goodness, then do devotional service. No, you do devotional service, that will bring you to goodness. So don't be attached to passion, ignorance, let that go. But once you get to goodness, you have to be able to give that up also. Right? In other words, if you can give up passion and ignorance, then it should be very easy to give up goodness. But because goodness is better, then we sometimes, that's hard to give up. You know, like the smart is, they're attached to their lifestyle. They don't want to give that up. Right? Because the consideration of why they do it is because of the good things that it is. Not that because it pleases the Lord. So it has to be, it pleases the Lord. So Sudama Brahmana, then he's in Shuddha-sattva. So he's performing all his duties, but he's doing them to please the Lord. Right?
So. Is it the statement, first conscious, then Krishna conscious? Has it something to do with it?
Some?
First conscious, then Krishna conscious?
Yes.
Has this statement something to do with what you just said?
Yes. Yes, you could say. Because the point is, it's only in goodness are you actually conscious. Passion, there's some consciousness, but it's, you know, it's just like the levels are given. So it's like, goodness is like a mirror covered with dust. You can almost see, but very easily you can remove it. Right? Then a smoke covering fire, then that's harder to get rid of. Does that make sense? Like, you know, he's sitting over there, been there for the last half hour, and still the smoke hasn't gone away. He's standing like anything, but still there. You know, it's hard to get rid of, but, you know. Like that. And then mode of ignorance is the embryo in the womb. That, you know, that's not, that's covered. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense? So, that's why if you become conscious, then you're aware of what it is that situates you in knowledge. So from that platform, now you can properly be Krishna conscious. But it's not that being conscious or being in knowledge creates Krishna consciousness. So it's not that jnana, just like we've said, karma doesn't make bhakti, jnana doesn't either. So it's the desire to do that to please Krishna that gets the result. But the point is Krishna gives the methods by what you can do to get the result. You know, it's not that you with great determination decide, you know, okay, I'm just going to bungee jump off this, bridge all day and all night until I develop pure love for Krishna. It's not a recommended method, so we don't hear anything about anybody doing that. Does that make sense? So, the whole point is that it's you're doing what's recommended, but you're doing that to please Krishna. That's what catches Krishna's attention. Does that make sense? So yes, what you're saying is that first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So that is what's being talked about. But one has to be able to see it in the context of what's pure bhakti. Right? Otherwise, then we take it that the secondary aspects of consciousness is bhakti. But the point is, the sense you're doing it for Krishna, why you wouldn't be conscious. Right? How do you do service if you're not conscious of what you're doing? Does that make sense? So in other words, we can see is actually Krishna consciousness is just the point of being conscious of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? And then that's the thing. Then if it's favorable, means that doesn't have any other ulterior motive. So it's favorable means it's according to Krishna's desire. Right? And then without karma jnana means it's without our desire. So it's we're conscious. How we're conscious is favorable to Krishna, how he likes it, and avoiding, you know, the consideration of what we like. Right? We're doing it because that pleases Krishna and that's what we can do. Does that make sense? That's why you have to know your nature. Then you know what are the things that you like to do. If you don't know your nature, then much of the time you don't actually know what you like to do. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. All this can be automatically done if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. So all that can be done. In this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. Yeah? So, in other words, it comes out, devotional service. But the point is we'll take it, oh, yeah, just be devout. Okay, we've heard all that. You know, let's get into something, you know, that has more grit to it. But the point is that here, this is the mechanics of what are going on. Devotional service already includes all these because each one of these goes back to Krishna. So if it's already done. So as more you understand that, the more you can see in your own life how everything is connecting back to Krishna. Does that make sense? Aren't they late? Yes.
If we're following the orders of the spiritual master, does that mean that our devotional service is free from passion?
It means that's properly situated. Then what we do with it, then that will determine. But at least we're situated there and we're trying to do. But if there is, from our side, some of these, then there may be distraction. But we try to see, according to the instructions that, you know, that are being given here, that there are no distractions. That's why he says, by making plans with determination. Right? But that determination means it's about pleasing Krishna. And so then we have plans on how we can do that, but those plans have to be practically applied to the circumstance. Right? The time, place, and circumstance. So then when we apply it, then determination doesn't mean we don't change our plan. It means that we keep the same goal to please Krishna there. That makes sense. Yeah, then everything else will work. Because the point is we're working in the field can change, since it's energy, energy changes, energy adjusts. So even as we go to start something, it adjusts. And especially if we leave it. We look at it today and think, oh yeah, we can do like that. And we leave it a few days, but when we go back, it's changed. How you can tell. Yeah. And if they are using an L, then that means that they speak Chinese. Right. No? Hale Kishina. Yeah. Cars don't work over there, so, at least not in these situations. Okay, so he is being quiet when he goes by. Okay. In this way, he wants to get the cows fired up. Okay, in this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature, right? By engaging in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. Then all these other things will happen, right? So then, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. One conquers rajas and tamas by greater degree of sattva, right? By if there's more sattva, then passion and ignorance can be conquered, because they come about by a lack of knowledge, right? Means, how you say, ignorance means you just don't know, everything's backwards. So by having proper knowledge, that will remove that. Passion means you may be doing the proper technique, but your motive and everything, it's wrong. The attitude's wrong, those things are wrong. So then, or at least it's wrong when you get the results. That maybe you may be properly using it at the time to get it, But once you have it, then you see the mode of passion comes in. So before you start passion, at the time you're using goodness to get it, but once you get the result, again, back to passion. So then again, knowledge to understand the process will remove that. Right? One conquers sattva by indifference to the results of action. Right? So the results of action come, but they're not for ourselves. Right? That will situate you on the position of shuddha sattva. Right? Because a result is coming, but the result's not for myself. Right? That will give us this higher position. Right? Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense? Kind of makes sense. Made sense this morning, but not now.
Situation changed.
Situation changed. That's the whole point we mean, is that you work in the present, and then whatever is the headspace now, you work from that point.
Usually, modern theory would be that knowledge is important, but experience is all in all. Because when you meet an experienced person, so when we speak about knowledge, sometimes devotees refer that this is theory. When it comes to practice, it's like a whole other...
Yes, but the point is what do you practice? If what you're practicing is not that theory, then what is it? And if that's there, then what means how to understand or learn what it is to be practiced? Right? In other words, if it's not a particular knowledge that you're applying when you practice, then what is it? And why aren't they discussing that? But we know it is that knowledge. But the point is you must know how that all combines.
Because each devotee would have a particular experience of applying knowledge.
Yes, experience, but that experience is from applying knowledge. Does that make sense? So, yes, some people will say that knowledge is theory. And it's not that it's not always true. Some people are espousing many things, and it is theoretical, but it's not necessarily something that can be practiced. So that's why it says that those who give advice to those who do practical work must know the practical field. Right? Means, in other words, you can have... Yes, does that make sense? You don't just have anybody who has knowledge of the field, but those who have the knowledge and can't apply it into the practical. Though they don't do it, but they know how to connect it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what you have to work on. But if you don't work on knowledge, then how is it intelligence? Then it's just spur. I don't know what you call it. Just
experimental.
You know, when you just do things, something comes. You just do it. Sporadic, impetuous. Like that, it's just you feel and just do, but that's what animals do. You know, it comes by, they bark. It comes by, they run. You know, it's like, you know.
That's instinct.
Yeah, it's that's for them. The Lord takes, you know. So therefore, you're one's working on the animalistic platform. You know, we're not meaning, I say, we're not meaning instinct, meaning, what do you call it? Krav Marg, or like that. We're meaning it's just that it's not, there is no method or anything. There is no plan. It's just whatever you feel like.
That's the name in English.
Hmm?
That's the name in English too, you see?
No, that's taken from. Okay, one conquers all obstacles quickly and easily by bhakti to Guru. Because if you please Guru, you please Krishna, and then the obstacles are removed. So the obstacles to devotion are actually the mentality, the impure consciousness. That's actually the obstacle. The obstacle is not something physical. You understand? Does that make sense? It may have an effect because our consciousness is affected by the gross and subtle body. But technically speaking, the obstacle, if one comes to the transcendental platform, then being in the same situation doesn't bother you. Right? Like Duryodhana just sees Yudhishthira's wealth and he's so disturbed. Yudhishthira loses all that, he's undisturbed. That's the difference. We generally take it that religion means I do work, I get good results. Right? I do physical work, I get a physical result. Emotional, I get emotional. Intellectual, I get intellectual. So it's about getting good results. So therefore, bhakti being the highest religion, by that one thing, I should get all those to the best that there actually is. But if that's our mentality, then we may or may not get that. The point is, when it's just about Krishna, then he may award those if it's suitable. Like Sudama Brahman, there's no change in his perspective on life before he visited Krishna and after. Does that make sense? You know, just the offerings improved. That's all. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, so now he's offering big offerings, but before he offered chipped rice, he made one morsel, which means you pick up something and just throw that in your mouth. It's not a handful, it's just, you know, what little he can pick. That's it. And from that, then Rukmini Devi said, that's enough. You know, it's already so great. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is how to be able to discern that. So if we can see that, then it makes it so much easier. So that's why in 7th canto we're getting into these fine things, which we'll get more and more, because in 10th canto, then what are the difference in the moods and flavors of the different devotees and the different realms and all that. Does that make sense? And then how that comes in contact with the material world, and then what do they do, what are the materialists, you know, the whole thing. So we can see it very nicely, yes.
I was thinking that how do you attain these things, and it's by association.
How do you attain which things?
You know, like being so much detached and being.
It's by, yes, it's by, it's by this, this you mentioned here. What is it? One conquers all obstacles quickly and easily by bhakti to guru. That's the whole thing. We're committed to the instruction of the spiritual master, you know, in serving Krishna. Right, so Rupa Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, then he's given us the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the understanding of how we approach the Bhagavatam, that's given to us by Rupa Goswami. That comes down through the Parampara, that's given to us by Srila Prabhupada. Right? So then, from that, then everything works nicely. So we stick to that, then it'll work.
Yeah. But I don't know if I have. I mean, it's not that maybe I don't have, but I don't have close enough association with devotees who are actually on this level.
But this is the association.
Yeah, other than the devotees, but like.
No, but that's the point. That is the association. And then if you have more, in other words, individuals like that, then that adds to it. It's not that this is just a minor thing and the other is the major thing. Prabhupada makes the point, is as Vapu and Vani. So Vani is the most important. Because Vapu you may get, you may not get. So like you said, you may have association with advanced devotees, you may not have. But the point is the instructions, that we can always take advantage. We've heard, we can always apply it, contemplate it, apply it. That association, that's going to get us the most benefit. Right? Yeah, so that's the thing. Okay, this is like taking a strong medicine which cures all diseases, right? So connecting to Krishna through the instruction of the spiritual master, that cures all diseases. As we saw before, all these different difficulties that come up, all these diseases of material consciousness, that's all removed by the devotional service. For the jnanis, destruction of lust and other obstacles is a sought result of devotion to guru. For the pure devotees, destruction of lust is a secondary result of devotion to guru. That is the difference. So that's the difference between the jnanis and the bhaktas. For the jnanis, they're worshipping guru and trying to destroy the lust and all these impurities that are there. Because that will situate in the pure state, then they'll be able to be properly situated in knowledge and liberation and that. But for the devotees, they're trying to situate themselves in nice service to the spiritual master. Being situated there, then as a result, then knowledge and detachment come, but for them that's a secondary. It's not the reason they're doing. So I'm not chanting my japa so I'll become freed from all material contamination. I'm chanting my japa to please Guru and Krishna and to associate with Krishna in this way. From that, then all these other things will come. Right? So the spiritual master says, avoid these things. So therefore, then when the situation comes up, we avoid. Yes?
How do the jnanis express their devotion to the Guru? We express by services.
They'll also. Well, it means it's just like this. Is there a wide varieties of pious individuals and they're serving a wide variety of gurus? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and is the method of serving basically the same?
Yes.
So that's the point. So what's the actual difference? That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is pointing out. It's the consciousness. It's that purification is the primary for the jnani. Right? Piety is the primary for the karmi. But devotion is the primary for the devotee. Yes?
Can we say that their prayojanas only differ?
Yes, but that means their consciousness is different.
Yeah, but sadhana?
Yes, the method will be the same. That's what's being repeated again and again and again, is that the Vedic process is the process.
So up to liberation, that's what we usually
say. Yes, it's all the same. So that you're going to do all the same activities. That's why the Shastra recommends that. You see, like when Narad Muni's talking, he'll go in and out of talking about just the technicalities of things how are being done as given by the Shastra, and then about pure devotion. Because the form is going to be the same. We take it that because we're focused on secondary, like the jnanis and karmis, that therefore the devotional process is different from the other. What's different is the consciousness, and that makes everything. You know what I'm saying? Just let's say, for example, one may say, no, but that's not the main, it's the form. But no, the acharyas say that's not it, it's not the form. It's the mood. Just like, let's say, someone comes up to you and they go through all the motions, being really nice, smiling, being very open and everything like that, but there's something wrong. They're totally motivated. They want to get to know you because they want to get something done. Okay? Then someone else does the same thing, says the exact same things, physically interacts exactly the same, but it's sincere and in friendship. You understand? So the form is the same. That the actual major difference is in the consciousness. We make it that the major difference is in the form, because that's what we've done in the material world. You change the form, right? There's the guys on the bicycles, and they wear all their funny tight stuff and this and that, right? But then other guys, then they if you ride on, have you ever seen a guy in really tight stuff and everything on a skateboard? No, you wear really baggy stuff, because if you fall off the skateboard, you understand? The bicyclists think they'll never fall off, but the guy's a little more practical, right? So that's the whole thing, is that you see it in connection with that, with the secondary. But so we take it that that's the real thing, that I'm changing, so that there must be different. We had the discussion the other day on the Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti. We think it's a different form. It's exactly the same form. The difference is in the consciousness. That's why we say you don't have to change what you're doing, you have to change the consciousness. Right? Then, once we change the consciousness, if we find that what we're doing is not appropriate because of that's being done because of a particular unfavorable consciousness, then we'll change what we're doing. But it's we're changing the consciousness, that changes what we're doing. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So changing consciousness changes the form?
Yes, because gross comes from subtle. From consciousness, then you get the subtle body. From the subtle body, you get the gross body. You understand? If you have spiritual consciousness, you get a spiritual body. If you have material consciousness, you get a material body. Right? So that's how it works. So that's what's being discussed. So we're used to it's on the what you do with the gross body is the thing, but actually it's what you do with the consciousness and the subtle body. Right? Like here he's talking about envy, determination, lust, lamentation, illusion. But now previously, in the previous cantos, they were discussing, doing the proper activities and that, but do it connected to Krishna and everything like that. So now they're not talking about what activity is being done. They're talking about the qualities used in performing that activity. But those qualities have ultimately go back to Krishna. So therefore, if you're serving Krishna under the direction of Guru, that gets everything. But one has to keep oneself there. And so that what comes easily, one does that. If not, then following his instructions, you focus on those things. But you have to accept the principle is that having obtained that, you can still give it up. You understand? Let's say I control the senses, but then it has to be about Krishna, not about controlling the senses. You understand? So that's the thing. We give up passion and ignorance by cultivating goodness, but we give up goodness by practicing detachment. We give up that detachment by practicing attachment to Krishna. Right, so we're detached from the material, but attached to Krishna. Right, it's not for the material, but it's for Krishna. The impersonalists or the materialists who want to be pious, they perform an activity without any desire for the result. But it's not that the result's for Krishna; they just don't want the result. That will purify them and bring them to the platform of goodness, or actually pure goodness. But the point is within pure goodness, then the real pure goodness is devotional service. Because the other is, it's temporary. Everybody's in pure goodness for a short time. When Mahavishnu breathes out, everyone's in pure goodness. And then when Brahma creates, then we're no longer in pure goodness. And all that's happening within 3/4 of a second. So,
Maharaj, sorry. It's happened the same time. We get detached from the material and attached to Krishna. It's happened.
It happens if you're conscious of it. Otherwise, for the jnanis, it doesn't happen like that. They get detached from the material energy, but not attached to Krishna. That means they do to Krishna in the form of Brahman, but it's not him as a person, so it's not sustainable. Because the jiva is a person. So therefore, unless you become attached to the transcendental person, you can't maintain the transcendental platform. So in other words, impersonalism is boring. You'll get bored. You're a person. You'll get bored. Doing nothing, you'll get bored. So therefore, since you have to do something and you are transcendental and want to maintain transcendental, then you have to do things in connection with the supreme transcendental who has a form and desires and like that. That's what was the discussion this morning. Is that because it says the supreme has desire, therefore it can't be that the material energy is the supreme.
Means it's for the devotee.
Yes, for the devotee, then that
Krishna,
comes.
The
yes, detached from that. But yes. But his point is that you balance it nicely.
We've been discussing what comes easily first, that's that nature. At the same time, now we're speaking about mode of goodness, and goodness means first comes poison, then comes nectar. So how to differentiate?
Yes, but that's what comes easy. See, is doing something that's a little bit difficult and then you get the results, that's what's easy. So within what's easy, you may pick what's easier. Does that make sense? Are all things in the mode of goodness exactly the same amount of poison and nectar?
Okay.
Right? So therefore, here's the point. This is what you have to catch. The nectar and the poison are balanced. So how much nectar there is in the mode of passion in the beginning is how much poison is going to be there when it switches. and how much poison there is in the mode of goodness when you start, that's how much nectar will be there later.
So we should measure it beforehand.
Yes, or just be prepared. So if you see this is really tough, just it will give very good results. So if you can't handle that much poison, then be also resolved. I mean, yeah, resolved, or where you are surrendered to the fact that you're also only going to get that much nectar. I can only handle 5%. Poison, that means I can handle 5% nectar. Not, no, I can handle 100% nectar, but the two go together. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, you like the Lamborghini, but, you know, one tire probably costs you $2,000. One. You know, so they go together, not that, you know, no, it's just you put on the, you know, the new $10 retreads and you're good. You know, so that doesn't... Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So, we're making the difference that the activity is the same. That's the whole point. The Vedic culture is one activity. That's why when people ask us, oh, are we Hindus? Then the proper answer is yes, by religion, but by philosophy, we're Vaishnav. So in other words, the methods we use are the same that all the Hindus use who are using proper, you know, I mean, there's plenty of people who make up their own stuff. All the, you know, Chala Dharma, Vidharma, you know, all that kind of jazz. But for those who properly follow what the Shastra says, we're doing the same thing. Right? So we're Vedic by religion, we're Vaishnava by philosophy. Because everybody has their own philosophy, so ours is Vaishnava. So that's the point, is in the Vedic culture, it's one community when it comes to what you do. But it's different community based on your philosophy. So we have one community based on a philosophy, and then unlimited communities based on religion. Like that. So, and but the problem is we want the community on the religious level, but then that means you have to have one religion. Right, you can't have many religions and have community. You know, you can do that. You know, once a year, twice a year, the religious conference, everyone gets together and hugs each other and all that, and then that's it for the other 300. You know, the other, you know, how you say, few hours of the day and the other 364 days. Then you know, it's not happening.
Where's the freedom and the expression of individuality?
Yes, you can do that, but then is anybody else going to like your freedom and expression of individuality?
Well, they're expressing theirs.
Yes, but that's the whole point, is if you do whatever you like, no one else likes it. So, but at the same time, they say all that.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. You know, it's just like reading the other day on something, and it was talking about trench coats and different things and the colors of trench coats. And so one of the traditional colors is black. But then somebody made the point that, well, no, but black trench coats, those are worn by the Nazis. So therefore, you know, if you want to be proper on the social, you don't use black trench coats. But then somebody pointed out, one, is those were black leather trench coats. And only a few people wore black. Most wear green and other colors. All Nazis didn't wear black. Does this make sense? So in other words, you get this thing is that you want to do it, you like black, but then others will say, no, but that means this, and you want to do that, no, but that means that. And that's why the story is given of the father, son, and the donkey. Doesn't matter how you arrange it, it's wrong. You're all walking. You got a donkey, aren't you idiots? Why are you walking? You all get on the donkey. Oh, the poor donkey has to carry everybody. You know, the son's on the donkey. Oh, hey, the father's a senior and you're sitting up there. Then the son's down. Oh, you don't care for your son? It doesn't matter how you do it. People will complain. So this idea of people will stop complaining, that's not this side of the Viraja. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. I say we're living on the wrong side of the Viraja. Right? Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's like a story
book. Yeah. Narad Muni continued. I'm imagining about this tall, yeah, blonde hair, and carrying a chihuahua. No? Yeah. Okay. The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. Right? No matter what you do, you will be frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like bathing of an elephant. You'll get something, you'll die, but then you'll lose it. Because it's not sustainable. Unless there's this proper connection with the spiritual master, then the, how you say, it's not sustainable. And that connection is through instruction. You know, like that, following. Coming back the other way. Okay, footnote 23. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 25 and 26 to Bhagavat Akramichi Mala chapter 13, entitled Sadhana Bhakti, executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. Aikantiki Namashraya Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. So then this will, how you say?
Why changing holy name if we talk about the spiritual master?
Because how do you exclusively take shelter of the holy name unless one has that full faith that the spiritual master is representing the Lord? Because that's the first stage in the process. When Rupa Goswami gives the 64 items, that's the first stage, is taking shelter of the spiritual master with that faith. Because if one doesn't have that faith, the process won't work so good. That's why it's said. Before initiation, you test, you see all these different things, and once you're convinced, then you take initiation. If you're not convinced, don't take initiation. Right? If you're convinced, then you do. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the point is they represent, and then how they represent. Because it's the instructions that's there. Right? Now, if you can get everything to match, then that's considered good. Just like who was telling? Haridas Thakur? They were telling him that some preach but don't necessarily follow all the sadhana etiquette. Some do the sadhana etiquette but don't preach. But he does both. So that's the ideal. That's why he's the Namacharya. Mahaprabhu told him. Oh, okay. Okay. I thought it was another devotee. That's far out. Then you know it's got to be good.
When we speak about spiritual master, could also be this meant the shiksha guru?
Yeah, it just means spiritual master. It means the whole point is that you should be properly connected, properly situated. Because the point is what is it that you're accepting as non-different from the Lord? The body of the spiritual master or the instructions? Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Hey, I heard you're going to get, you're getting initiated. Yeah, there's that. Who is it? Oh, it's this one. And oh, why did you pick them? Oh, they got such great toes. I've never seen such toenails and all that. You know, and the amazing things, they don't even get pedicures. It's just naturally like that. I just had to surrender to that person. That's just, you know, because it talks about, you know, Krishna and his toenails and all this and that. And so these, and then this is definitely representing the Supreme Lord. Yeah, that's how.
What the lotus feet, isn't it?
Yeah. So, okay. Well, that's the feet. You get to the feet, but first you approach. It says the yogis can't even approach the toenails. So, here's got great toenails. So then we've got a connection. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Is that it's the instructions. That's the whole. And we have a conditioning, so therefore there's certain ways of the instruction, certain aspects that we can appreciate. But the point is that we still have to accept it. Right? And like that. That must be there. Yes.
So why do we choose a certain spiritual master? Because of our conditioning or because it's like some, you know, eternal, like...
No, it means eternal means you start now and it goes on eternally.
Oh, okay.
Not that it's, you know, something wrong. Yeah, you don't have to do that kind of jazz.
Yeah.
As the man pointed out the other day, the age of Aquarius actually never gets here. So then that whole approach to spiritual life actually has a weak point.
Okay.
You know? I mean, very enthusiastic, very idealistic, but yeah, it's got a weakness.
So it's to do with our conditioning now, like the way, because
it's like this.
Everybody's saying the same thing, but
how do you like it delivered?
Yeah, but that would depend.
You know, it's like that. Somebody likes it in those little nice little boxes like that with a little wire over the top and two little sticks to eat it with. You know, somebody likes it on a plate. Somebody likes it in the middle where it spins around and then you take off what you want. You know.
Home delivery. Home delivery.
Yeah, so you understand? So the whole point is there's something what you prefer, how you appreciate. So someone likes how they tell the stories and make practical about how someone does something and the different devotees and what they did and the relationships and all that, then are explaining what was happening there or just inspiring one to do devotional service. You know what I'm saying? So every preacher has some particular approach on how they preach. So we appreciate that. That's then what we, how we. But that's why Siksha Gurus are many, because we may appreciate so many preachers. But, you know, this one for this, that one for that, like this. That make sense? Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though this is true, if one thinks the guru is an ordinary mortal, everything becomes useless. For one who thinks by faulty intelligence that the if you thought that guru who is, even an amsauf, if you think that guru who is, even an amsauf, right? Yes. That makes sense to you? They're saying it's German. So.
Sounds German.
But it's not, no. He says no. It says it sounds there.
Foreigners, it sounds German. It
does sound German, yeah. Yeah, that's always the funny.
It usually doesn't do three words in a row like that.
And then two of them in one sentence.
Yeah.
Then, okay, no, what I'm just saying is it's just fun to play with.
New goal for Microsoft Word.
Yeah, no, it's just...
Just
okay.
The end of the study guide, so...
It's getting tough. Yeah, the rest of it, you'll see the whole page, everything's connected. Yeah, it's all one sentence. It's only one more sentence to go, right? It covers five pages. Okay. Okay. For one who thinks by faulty intelligence that the guru who is even an amsa of the Lord, Sakshat Bhagavati, or in whom the Lord is directly present, is an ordinary mortal, whatever he has heard, such as the Lord's mantra, his process of hearing, and his contemplation become useless. right? Because if we don't appreciate the position of the guru, then that's our connection to Krishna. Then how will we be connected to Krishna? Yes.
Let's say we appreciate it and then it was lost. Appreciation. What we did before also lost?
No, but that the point is it's like you have a nice bank balance and like that, and you lose the passbook. Is it lost?
Because we say that
means the point is what do we mean by appreciation? If it's a matter of we can't see any benefit to the instruction that was given before, and therefore how we were benefited by that, then of course we'll lose it. If we see that the instruction given before was beneficial, but maybe at this point they're not able to continue that, or we find someone else's, then it's a benefit, we get benefit. Point is, are we continuing, or is it we're just, you know, throw everything out? Is it a progression, or are we just changing the scenario? Huh? Srila Prabhupada adds, one may argue by saying that since the spiritual master's relatives and the men of his neighborhood consider him an ordinary human being, what is the fault on the part of the disciple who considers the spiritual master an ordinary human being? This will be answered in the next verse, but the injunction is that the spiritual master should never be considered an ordinary man. One should strictly adhere to the instructions of the spiritual master, for if he is pleased, certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan nagatikatopi. Okay, so that says in the next, that's the next verse. Okay. Narada Muni continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the master of all other living entities and of the material nature. His lotus feet are sought and worshipped by great saintly persons like Vyas. Nonetheless, there are fools who consider Lord Krishna an ordinary human being. Srila Prabhupada comments, the example of Lord Krishna as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead is appropriate in regard to understanding the spiritual master. The spiritual master is called Sevaka Bhagavan, the servitor personality of Godhead. And Krishna is called Sevya Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is worshipped. The spiritual master is the worshipper God, whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the worshipable God. This is the difference between the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the saying is not different, but it's still on that same position. Like that. Another point, Bhagavad Gita, which constitutes the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is presented by the spiritual master as it is, without deviation. Therefore, the absolute truth is present in the spiritual master. As clearly stated in text 26, Jnana Deepa Prade. The Supreme Personality of Godhead gives real knowledge to the entire world, and the spiritual master, as the representative of the Supreme Godhead, carries the message throughout the world. Therefore, on the absolute platform, there is no difference between the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Someone considers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or Lord Ramachandra, to be an ordinary human being. This does not mean that the Lord becomes an ordinary human being. Similarly, if the family members of the spiritual master, who is the bona fide representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, consider the spiritual master an ordinary human being, this does not mean that he becomes an ordinary human being. The spiritual master is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore one who is very serious about spiritual advancement must regard the spiritual master in this way. Even a slight deviation from this understanding can create disaster in the disciples' Vedic studies and austerities. Right, so here, the Gita's instructions are there, so the spiritual master presents it as it is. So that means then as the founder, he gives Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then we, as his followers, or his students, his disciples, then we preach Bhagavad Gita as it is, according to how he's given it to us in the purports. That makes sense? Yeah, so that's the principle. So, you know, here it means we're going to give it as it is, as it's given to us, but it also means that we're going to present it as how it's presented in as it is. So how Prabhupada gives it, That's how we're going to present it. And then, using our intelligence for the time, place, and circumstance, then we'll use the particular wording and examples so that they understand what Prabhupada said. We don't try to distract from there. We don't try to change it. We don't try to do anything. So, like the postman, he represents the postal system, but he doesn't change it. He just gives it as it is. So Prabhupada's given us the philosophy. Then we give it to others in the same way. Right? So yeah. Narad Muni continued. Ritualistic ceremonies, regulative principles, austerities, and the practice of yoga are all meant to control the senses and mind. But even after one is able to control the senses and mind, if he does not come to the point of meditation upon the Supreme Lord, all such activities are simply labor in frustration. As professional activities or business profits cannot help one in spiritual advancement, but are a source of material entanglement, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot help anyone who is not a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, in other words, these things, engaged in the Lord's service, they become beneficial. But if not, you get no benefit from them. It appears as some temporary, then it's lost. So that's the point. Always connect everything to Krishna, then everything becomes very good. Right? Footnote 24. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 28 and 29 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 14, entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. So, therefore, if you perform all these ritualistic ceremonies, regulated principles, austerities, and the practice of yoga, controlling the mind, controlling the senses, but you do not come to the point of bhakti, that's unfavorable. So in other words, these things are only favorable connected to devotional service. They're not favorable on their own. That's the point. Right? So if you're already doing them, according to how Shastra recommends, then great, now just connect that to Krishna. And if you're not doing them, you connect to Krishna, and then from that platform, start doing them. But they're not done on their own, and then thought that will get one to bhakti, or when by doing that, the results of that, that's valuable on its own. So, yeah. One who desires to conquer the mind must leave the company of his family and live in a solitary place, free from contaminated association. To maintain the body and soul together, he should beg as much as he needs for the bare necessities of life. My dear king, in a sacred and holy place of pilgrimage, one should select a place in which to perform yoga. The place must be level and not too high or too low. There one should sit very comfortably, being steady and equipoised, keeping his body straight. And thus begin chanting the Vedic pranava, while continuously staring at the tip of the nose. A learned yogi practices the breathing exercises through the technical means known as puraka, kumbhaka, and rechaka, controlling inhalation and exhalation and then stopping them both. In this way, the yogi restricts the mind from material attachments and gives up all mental desires, right? Because when air is moving in and out, the mind is restless because it's moving, right? As soon as you stop the breathing, the mind stops being restless. So you're practicing that. That's why they're trying to do. They're trying to get to the point where they stop breathing.
You die.
Hmm?
You die.
Well, if you do it, the yogis, then they can do. But without that, yeah, you have a problem. Right? So I guess it may be scientific why little kids, they have a problem and they get upset, so they hold their breath trying to make the problem go away because then the mind becomes peaceful. And then Okay. As soon as the mind, being defeated by lusty desires, drifts towards feelings of sense gratification, the yogi should immediately bring it back and arrest it within the core of his heart. When the yogi regulates, so the core, that's where Krishna is. So the Krishna is in the core of the heart, you bring it back to Krishna. When the yogi regularly practices in this way, in a short time his heart becomes fixed and free from disturbance, like a fire without flames or smoke. When one's consciousness is contaminated by material lusty desires, it becomes calm and peaceful in all activities. For one is situated in eternal blissful life. Once situated on that platform, one does not return to materialistic activities. 28-35, Srila Prabhupada comments. Brahma Shuka Shprishtam is also described in Bhagavad Gita 18:54. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nasochati Nakankshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Lavate Padam. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In this situation, he begins transcendental activities or devotional service to the Lord. Generally, once elevated to the transcendental platform of Brahma Sukha, transcendental bliss, one never comes down. But if one does not engage in devotional service, there is a chance of returning to the material platform. Aruhya krichanena param padam tata patantyadho nadrita yushmad angrayaha. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. One may rise to the platform of Brahma Sukha, transcendental bliss, but even from that platform, one may fall down to the material platform if he does not engage himself in devotional service. So coming to that transcendental platform, we continue serving the spiritual master, the order of the spiritual master, with faith and that determination, then we will continue on that platform. But if we don't, then we can fall. That's why we see what happened to Jarabharat. He forgot, actually, the order of the spiritual master. He wasn't performing things in God consciousness. So he fell from that platform. But because he was on that liberated platform, and that, then he maintained, and then we see that that came to perfection as Jarabharat. Right? But the point is that one still has to be careful. Because otherwise, if this warning is not there, then anybody who gets a little advanced in something, then he'll think, yeah, I can sit back. But one always has to be vigilant. That's the word probably. Yes? Okay. That was just that section. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premi. Hare Krishna.